There is a podcast brewing that's about to take over podcasting for good. The only podcast that you are going to need to tune into day in, day out, is the Member Guest Podcast.
If I can hit it down the middle of the fairway, that's great. But again, with the driver right now, the driver sucks.
John Daly, and you're listening to the Member Guest Podcast. Rip it, rip it.
Audio issues have been resolved, and another episode of the Member Guest Podcast has been started. Today, we are talking about a little bit of a recap of what's gone on the past couple weeks in each one of our games, and then we had a couple of listeners write in DMs, as well as text some of our hosts, and would like to do an episode on how to get better as an amateur. I know, Andy, you had one of your guests on about breaking 100. I think just a lot of people in general are starting to pick up the game. It's that time of the year, like feel like season's starting to close out. So what can I do to shoot some lower scores before going into the winter, feeling good for next year? So maybe just a quick recap the past couple of weeks, because it's been a while since we have been in studio together. A lot of virtual guests. If you haven't heard, a lot of really good feedback on the Dr. Izzy Justice episode. Had a lot of people say that was pretty nails. So shout out to you guys for running that episode. So Andy, why don't we start with you? A little 60 to 120 second. What's been going on, bud?
Yeah. One thing that happened is I went to Oakmont. I don't think we've talked about that on the pod.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, I know. I love wearing the Oakmont merch and then having people ask what that logo is and saying Oakmont. Yeah. And then having them be like, oh, and they kind of feel dumb. And then I just
say, the one with the big tree, right?
Stop.
Game.
And then I just say, it's in Pittsburgh. Oakmont.
It's a little
Pittsburgh
club in Pennsylvania.
No, it was a really cool buddy I work with, is a member and, went with some colleagues and it was incredible, man. Like got there on a Monday night, stayed in the cottages on the property, went and had dinner in the clubhouse. It was so cool.
Was there any potential chance of it moving into your number one? I know what your number one is, but was there a possibility of it moving into number one?
It's number two.
Solidly as a number two.
It's just like very solidly at number two on my list behind the old course. But, I mean, just a quick recap, like it's just a really cool vibe of a place. Very, very cool. It's not super stuffy. But it's not, you know, loose. But as an example on the Monday night, then we were there, you know, there's the ninth green, which is like this massive green. It's a giant square or like, kind of rectangle shaped. And the back of the green is actually the practice putting green. And so if you can imagine, like they can put the pin on the ninth green, like where within, I mean, it's 200 yard long.
It's all one piece.
It's all one piece of green.
Okay. So you could just be hitting like 5 iron into 10 guys on the practice
green. 100%, 100%. Right. And so, but on Monday night after we had dinner, like where the green ends, there's the literally the footsteps up to the clubhouse and there's like a outdoor area. And the thing to do is they have a mat with the Oakmont logo on it. And the thing, and then they have putters and golf balls sitting there. And so when it's dark, there's lights everywhere and you hit putts off of the steps onto the green and try to roll it down to the flag. And I mean, you hit like 70, 80 yard putts, right? And the greens there are so fast and so crazy. It's amazing.
Like 13s?
Yeah, faster probably.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So, I mean, just a really cool experience. Also sneaky, there's just an interstate that literally goes through the middle of the golf course. Like directly in the middle of it.
That's how La Trobe was in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Just the road, well, not interstate, but road straight through.
Yeah, I think it's the turnpike, and you don't see it the whole time unless you cross over it.
Just when you go over the bridge?
Yeah, because they've grown out all this stuff in it. But it's like literally like if you're looking, there's no trees really. So if you're looking from the steps of the clubhouse down, you can see the whole golf course, right? You can see everything. And there's an interstate that runs in the middle of it, which you can't see because it's like 100 yards down into the ground. It's wild. It's a wild, wild, wild place.
Is it loud? Like, can you hear the road traffic?
You can't hear anything. Weird. It's insane. Did absolute damage in the pro shop. I went in there twice. Like, I was just, I bought everything. I mean, like, it was dumb.
Give me three of those. Give me six of those.
Yeah. You kind of have to when you go to those places, don't you?
Yep. And then, yeah, I mean, I won't cover much else on it, but,
I don't know if anything can top that. It's pretty nails.
Yeah, it was cool.
Really tough to go after that too, Tony, by the way. You. So thanks.
Well, how do I follow that?
You guys hear me okay, by the way? I sound really quiet to me.
Yeah. I hear you fine.
Okay, I hear you. Good. Fine. Yeah.
Audio issues fixed.
Good.
Yeah. I mean, as far as my game goes, I've just been working on a few different things, and I was just telling both you guys before this episode that, a really standard problem that I always have is my backswing continually just gets longer and longer all as the season goes. So, just the other day I kind of just did a couple of swings where I felt like I was swinging very short and all of a sudden started hitting it like exponentially better. And then you take a video of it and it looks like a full swing. So, just a feel. And so I feel really good about where the game's headed here and excited for the rest of the season. Kind of bummed obviously that we're into September now, but hey, this is the best time of the year to play golf in Minnesota. So
really interesting you say that, because that's probably something that a lot of AMs can take away. I had the exact same problem, still do. Like I told you, Andy and Johnny weren't here yet, but half the time, maybe even more, three quarter of the time when I'm spraying it mid-round, the mid-round adjustment I'll make is just shorten your swing. And all of a sudden, it's like, that's just where everything goes wrong, isn't that, like, you know, getting way too long and starting to just get like way up here and just all out of sync. Shorten it up a little bit and, I mean, you're going to stripe it so much better. And you actually won't even lose distance really, because you're hitting the center of the club face.
Yeah, exactly. That's what tempo. If you start, you know, keep the swing compact and controlled, just turns into where way too many things can go wrong.
Yeah.
The longer the swing is.
As someone who's shortened his swing significantly, just be careful what you work on, because it might get too short, which is my current issue. It's just not fully finishing my backswing, and then you get out of sync and you get quick. And so just flagging how difficult golf is.
Johnny, you've been on planes like every week. I see where we've been going, man.
Doing a little bit of traveling. Unfortunately, I've been working more than I've been golfing, but I've been able to sneak a couple rounds in here and there. It's no Oakmont on the list, but spent some time in Chicago, which was fun. Went and played some golf down there with some fellas. Awesome part of that is got to stop by the new Bettinardi studio down there. The Studio B place is awesome. They did a great job with it. If anyone's ever in the area, it's over in Oak Brook now. They've got a badass upgraded Hive with a cool area where they do all the customization. So I don't want to give away too many secrets. You got to go see it for yourself, but super impressed with what they did there. Congrats to them.
And how many fitting bays or spots do they have now?
I only saw two putting bays. There might've been more. I didn't walk around the entire store while we were there, because there was just so many guys with us and it was a complete whirlwind, but there was two putting bays that I saw. And then they also had a simulator there for the wedges too, which I thought was pretty cool. So went in there, hit a couple balls. But yeah, just the display there was super modern, super cool. And you know, with any Bettinardi related thing, it's easy to spend a lot of money. So tried to do some damage control. All the guys that were with us got putters, but I just picked up a couple hats and small things like that. So had a blast, but yeah, I've haven't been playing as much as I'd like to at this point in the summer, but played the other day with a customer, shot a nice little 78. That was cool. With a few doubles mixed in there too. So I think we've got some low numbers in our future, but just got to keep grinding. So life's been good, hitting tight little high draws. So I can't complain.
Tight high draws. Kind of a nails ball flight. So
yeah,
that'll work.
Yeah. Transitioning into mine, I also went to the Bettinardi shop. Unfortunately, Tommy wasn't there because he was getting married that week. So shout out to our guy, Tommy. But everything you said is very accurate. I'm pretty sure it is just the two. The one note that I had is like the difference between, if anybody's been to the old studio and the new one, the new one's definitely, like you said, more modern, more like retail, if you will. And the old one is like, you get, it's cool because you get to see the floor in the shop, and it's kind of that difference between, you know, that like new modern retail type of feel than the old kind of, you know, you're kind of in the guts of it. So, and they're keeping both of them.
Yeah.
Well, they're going to have the old one still too.
Yeah. They're keeping both of them.
I think they're just going to dedicate more of the space at the older one to like officing and room for people to be there. But how cool is that when you walk in there and you look to the left and they've got the couch with the big B and all the head covers. I was just like, oh. Yeah, it was,
I was like, man, I've held like 40 of those at one point trying to find the perfect one.
So sick. Yeah, they're killing it. Super hats off to them.
Yeah. My biggest update was I played in the Mid-Am and it really snuck up on me because I had signed up earlier in the year.
The Minnesota Mid-Am, right?
The Minnesota Mid-Am. Yes, I am not that good. Beginning of the season, I said one of my goals was to play more competitive golf. So I went in, signed up for the Mid-Am, blocked off my calendar. And then it was like Sunday night and I looked, I'm like, oh, I'm playing in the Mid-Am tomorrow, the Minnesota Mid-Am. So it was at Island View the first day, showed up and had never seen the course. Shot, I think, 3 over. And then the second day was at Chaska Town Course, shot 4 over. So it's +7, ended up making the cut by one. The cut ended up being +8. So, Schaaf, Saxon, and Tim Samuelson, we were all at +7. So I saw a bunch of like our guys right in that same range. So that was kind of cool to see some people, you know, right in there, like feeling good. I ended up not playing the next day because for whatever reason, I didn't block off the third day on my calendar. Either because I didn't anticipate making the cut or just couldn't. So I had to work, but it was cool to make the cut. Didn't play. That was kind of a felt good to do that and like actually play some competitive golf. It was cool to see like how they structure the tournament and all those things. And both Island View and Chaska did a really good job with the setup and making sure like you're on time, 4 hour rounds, like no BS. You see a lot of characters there too. Like there was this dude in like all pink, spiky hair. Shout out to him. Had a really interesting pre-shot routine, but just a gamer.
Shout out that guy.
Yeah. Shout out that guy.
You didn't have a caddy, did you?
I did. So, Reg was on the bag.
Sick.
Day one.
Love that.
Cause my normal caddy couldn't go.
How was Reg on the bag for you?
He was solid. Okay. I mean, carried the bag. Yeah. He wouldn't let me use my staff bag. So I had to switch bags for that day. So that was a little, you know, I had to put a little extra effort in there, but, you know, he kept me loose. He can just talk to Reg for hours. So that was the biggest thing for me is like, I didn't know anyone I was playing with and they were all kind of serious. So I just wanted to play, you know, fast and loose, baby.
I love Reg.
Beef always says.
The final round, the third round was going to be back at Island View, right?
The third round was going to be at Island View. And I really wish I could have gone back because after playing it once, I was like, man, I felt like I could have played a lot better. Just, you know, like you said, hole one, absolute birdie hole. And I think I was a little nervous. I tugged mine left and I ended up making par. But like looking back, I'm like, man, you can hit driver pitching wedge into that hole if you hit it long enough. Yeah. And so just after seeing it once, I wish I could have gone back. But my
it's awesome year, that you did that, man.
I do too.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I really enjoyed it. Kind of proud of myself for playing some competitive golf. So,
Well, that was one of your goals that you set out to beginning of the year. So
yeah. So I checked that one off. I did not check off not changing anything in my bag. The entire bag is different. But you know,
competitive goal. That's I like that goal better anyway. So yeah you got to leave some room for flexibility in there.
Yeah. So, now to kind of transition into the actual topic of the episode. So as a reminder, like I said at the beginning, have had some people weigh in lately wanting to hear us talk a little bit more about how to get the game in a better place. And one of the topics that always comes up is like, it's awesome. You guys are club golfers, you know, all those types of things. What about like us guys that are either trying to find a club or maybe like don't have that place to go practice all the time? And so we're showing up early to tee times and have like an hour pre-round and that's my practice time, right? Like got a job, I've got kids, but like that's the time that I can actually practice. What do you do? And this was me for years. Like I wasn't a member at a club. And the couple things that I want to talk on or touch on and then ask you guys kind of what you think. I always try and go somewhere or would play somewhere that had a short game area where I could actually chip because I felt like I would get out. I would just head straight to the driving range. I would hit balls for 30 minutes with no plan. And I would go roll putts for 10 minutes into the first tee, like clockwork. And now I find it at Windsong where we play, we're fortunate enough to have this awesome practice area. I always start out just hitting chips now. I'll go down and I'll just hit like some little baby chips. And you could even do this at the driving range if there is no if there is no practice area, but kind of just getting your feels with some chips and some ball contact stuff always like feels like it kind of soothes me into getting to the range. And then I'll spend a lot more time putting in a short game than I do on the actual driving range. I think people just are always like, I need to hit the ball straight. I need to do this. And the old John Rahm saying of when the long game is sick, the short game nurses you back to health. And I think that like holds true, right? Like you can hit two really good shots up on or around the green and you can three putt or duff a chip. And all of a sudden you're like, what's going on? And so I would just say like one of the biggest things for me was always, spend more time chipping and putting instead of just going straight to the driving range and hitting balls for 30 minutes. Like that's not practice. You got to practice the rest of the game too.
I think this is an interesting topic. And some of this maps in my mind a little bit to like what your goal is as a player. You know, for me, it was always to get to be a scratch player was always my goal when I started playing. And so as a consequence, like any time I had to spend a golf was all about trying to get better at golf. And this is going to sound a little bit strange, but sometimes that you have to let go of score to do that and actually commit to shooting really bad scores while you're making changes. And so, you know, that being said, if you're somebody who's like, look, I just want to break 80 or I just want to break 90, then it's probably a different approach, you know, than so for me, I would say like, if you're that person who really, really wants to be like a really good player, all that, the more time you can spend, you're not going to be a really good player hitting a 220 yard balloon cut drive. It's going to be really hard. Like it's going to be super hard to shoot very low scores if you are hitting a spinny 4,000 spin driver that goes 220 and you miss right a lot, right? Or you slice it. So we could figure out a way to engineer a warm up and things like that and a way to manage yourself around the golf course to shoot 87. Sure. But your time, even before a round, if you don't have time to practice or do things, is going to be better spent towards that goal, technically working on your golf swing, I think, and even technically working on your golf swing on the course, in my opinion, than it is going to be spent trying to grind out a 92. That's just coming from someone who, that's how I got better. I mean, I went from, you know, a 15 handicap when I started to like a 4 in like 2 years. And then I went from like a 4 to like a 1 in a couple more years. And a lot of that was because I committed to what I needed to do technically with my swing. And I worked on it a lot, even on the golf course and even on the range. So that's kind of like player archetype one. But I think, Jordan, what you're describing makes a lot of sense for that person who like, hey, I just want to shave some strokes off and shoot the best score I can with my game. I don't really care about getting like a lot better. I just want to get the most out of my game where it is today. That's probably a different approach.
It's the people that are like that 20 handicap range and trying to, and when I say consistently, I mean like from a handicap perspective, probably break 90, right? Yeah. Like they're trying to shoot, like if you're a mid 80s to high 80s golfer, you're a good golfer. Mm-hmm. Like that is playing good golf. If you're better than bogey golf. And I think that's kind of what people are trying to unlock. And I remember when I was in that stage, the biggest thing was like, how can I get rid of these doubles and triple bogeys? Like I'll have these, and everybody has this, these 4 or 5 hole stretches. And they're like, okay, I can play golf. And the problem is they have 4 or 5 hole stretches where it's double bogey, double bogey, double bogey, double bogey. That's what kills it.
I think a big thing that people need to understand is, especially if you're in that 80, you know, let's say you're 90 to 110 golfer. I think the biggest thing is setting realistic expectations.
Mm-hmm.
You can't expect, if you're not truly dedicating a lot of time to golf, it is a very time intensive game to get good and to maintain your playing ability. So if you don't have the ability or the time to dedicate a lot of time to playing well, find some shots that you can feel confident in hitting, minimize your penalty strokes and set realistic expectations. You're not going to hit every green in regulation. You're not going to not three putt. Set some realistic expectations. Find a shot or two that you know you can feel confident in getting off the tee and just go have fun. And invariably, once you start doing that and you do have an enjoyable time on the golf course, you're going to want to get better and you're going to find time to dedicate to the sport. That's what happened to me, is that I just started playing and I've just loved the game. And it all of a sudden, because I enjoyed playing so much, I found ways to dedicate more time to it.
For the player that Jordan's describing though, I think like it is a very different mindset than, you know, someone who's like, if you're just focused on, hey, I want to shoot the best score I can shoot to my ability. That's even something I struggle with today.
I think every golfer on the planet
like,
does.
I think some of the things that have worked for me, like one, the Izzy Justice stuff of like trying to find a way to calm yourself down. Like I used to literally every, my pre-round routine up to like 2 weeks ago was 3-6 Mafia music, like just blasting on my way. And I would just try to get hyped. Like I was playing a football game.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's not right for golf. Like I've been listening to, I can share it, but it's like this, calming, relaxing acoustic music on the way to the golf course. And then, I think there's probably two things too that come to mind for this. One is like an old Tiger Woods quote, which is, if Tiger ever had a bad warm-up session, like he hit it everywhere, in his mind, he was just like, whatever, because I accomplished the goal, which was warming up. Like literally warming up is meant to like warm your body up.
Yeah.
Like, and how many do you guys like, I mean, honestly, like how many times do you stripe it on the range and then hit it terrible on the golf course? And how many times do you hit it terrible on the range and stripe it on the golf course?
So true.
It like, feels very much like that is pretty constant with a lot of people. Like,
yeah.
Like, so like Mark Lawrenson, if he's hitting it terrible on the range in his warm up, he's going to play an amazing round. That's just how he is.
That's a big thing. Is just
Lawrenson
like,
with an S or Z?
The one with the Lorenzen. Z.
Commit to just like warming up. And then I think another one is like lag putting. So like if you're going to putt, just try to get the speed of the greens down. Hit a lot of long putts and just try to get the speed of the greens down. Because like how many times do you see the amateur, like they don't figure out the speed until the eighth hole or the ninth hole? How many shots did that cost you? Like 8 or 9 shots. So if you can get that out of the way before. And then one thing that I do even before all rounds, especially competitive ones, is I try to hit like 10 to 20 to 30 three footers and just bury them in the hole. And just rock them in the hole. And it's actually like a confidence thing. Like when you see the ball and hear the ball going in the hole over and over and over and over again, it just builds your confidence up so much. Like even I'll hit two footers, like as long as I know it's going to go in, like, but it's just hearing the ball go in the hole, seeing the ball go in the hole and having that confidence of the ball going in the hole. And I think I would say 70-30 split putting green to score, in my opinion.
I agree with a lot of what you're saying. And for me personally, since we talked to Dr. Justice, the whole concept of just having just the target is, in my mind, a game changer. Because like I would find myself previously where I would be, you know, standing over a putt and you're thinking about something completely different. And you're like, and you know, after you roll a putt, you're like, what the hell was I doing? You know, if you are only thinking about the target, it really makes it difficult for you to lose track of your thought process or think about something else, because you're truly only thinking about the target. And that is what really resonated with me from that conversation.
There's a lot to this topic. Like
there is
another one. I'm sorry to jump in here again, but another one is like, have your like shit, like ready to go before you get to the golf course, like mark your balls. Like know where your tees are, like have a pouch for your tees, have a pouch for your freaking divot tool, have a pouch for your ball mark. Like we all probably don't even realize this, but we all have these rituals and routines that we do that help us get in the mode. And amateurs, like they don't have that. They're like, I got to run in the shop and buy golf balls. And like, does anybody have a ball mark? Like I don't have, let me go to my car and get a quarter. Like,
I mean, to be clear, we're amateurs too, but like we also take it very, very seriously.
Yeah. I'm just saying amateurs. I mean like recreational, like super recreational players.
Yeah. Like try not to be rolling. If your tee time's at 9:48, don't be rolling into the parking lot at 9:42.
So my buddy or one of them that brought up this topic, his name's Xavier, went to Winona, plays basketball. Shout out to Xavier, one of my good buddies. And he's like the perfect candidate for this conversation. It's going to resonate with a lot of people. He was a D2 basketball player. So clearly he's an athlete, right? Really competitive. He's got like all those things that make somebody get addicted to golf. He's got that. And like what you just said is such a, like if he was sitting right in front of me now, I'd say, like when you were getting ready for a basketball game like that, you were about to go out and dominate, you had your pregame ritual,
yeah,
right? Like have the same thing when you go and play golf.
I guarantee you before a basketball game, he's showing up to the gym 3-4 hours before. He's going out, shooting around. He's
listening to some music. Things.
He's got his things that he was doing.
Yeah. And when people go to play golf, like with the boys and they're, you know, like you said, have realistic expectations. If you're just going to play, that's fine. But if you truly want to get better, you should probably have a pregame ritual. You should have a pregame routine. And I know like when I go out for a match, it's a lot different than when I'm just like showing up like what I did on Saturday or whenever we played just to play with the boys. Like it's completely different.
Yep.
And so if you're going in with that mindset to prep for a round, you're like, I want to go put up a number today. Think about those things, get in that mindset. All the stuff that we talked about are things that are going to help lower those scores. I love talking about speed putting, mm-hmm. especially for people that are trying to lower scores. I mean, I tried doing that this year and I was already starting as a decent golfer, and just focusing on speed outside of 15 feet has exponentially improved my putting.
It's the so greens much are better. Different every day, right? So like if you can do that,
even
before
if you play
the
club, they're different
they're
every
different
day.
And one thing that I thought was really interesting when I caddied for Siegel, do you know how many drivers Siegel hit when he warmed up?
5-1
And it's like, that's the point. Like he was warmed up. Like he put a peg in the ground. He nuked a driver and hit a 2-yard cut and turns and looks at me and goes, I'm good.
Love that.
Like, you know, like he's not there to work on his driver. Yeah,
no,
like,
don't overwork.
He's going to go and shoot a score.
That's like, what Hillen says too.
His driver's like dialed, like in his mind, you know, like he's not there to grind on driver.
It's so good.
And so it's definitely something I've tried really hard this year is like, you know, maybe I'll look at a video of my swing once, you know, like with one swing or whatever before I go out to play, just because I can see like, all right, that day, like, what does it look like? Like what's the pattern that day? It varies a lot, but I'm trying really hard to do less of the technical stuff before I play. Again, the goal here is shoot a score. I think if your goal is get better at golf, like you need to commit to like having fundamentally sound mechanics.
And I would say consistency as well. One of the, I mean, people talk about it all the time. When you start to listen to podcasts or people that are truly good at golf, they'll tell you consistency is key. Yeah. And it's coming from a guy that changed a lot of his clubs, but there's a lot of things that I keep consistent. My golf ball, my golf tees, generally speaking, my golf shoes. Like there are a lot of things that can make a really big difference in your swing. You know, if you're wearing like no spikes, low top shoes, and all of a sudden you go to like Jordan spikes that lift you up a half inch, like think about what that does to your swing, right? Or if you play a Pro V1X and then you decide, oh, I'm going to go try and play a vice, like your drive's going to go 20 yards shorter. It just is. Right. So keep it, whatever you can keep consistent, like keep those things consistent and then work on everything else, like control the stuff that you control and then work on everything else that you can.
I totally consistent. The word consistency is very, very key. For me, I don't know about you guys. I'm assuming it probably is very similar, but for me, if I go 10 days without hitting a golf ball, I feel like I'm starting over. Almost. Like,
yeah, sometimes takes
me,
I do.
It takes me a couple of days of hitting balls and, you know, maybe playing a time or two to feel like I'm getting back into a rhythm where I feel confident about being able to play well.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the other thing I'll say too, like when you're on the course, it's really hard. Like you don't get confident with certain things that you do until you literally do it on the course. I think it's why people have this mindset of, oh, I putt so well on the practice range or on the putting green, I hit it so well on the driving range, then they get out there and something goes wrong and they think they did. It's like, well, did you hit it well on the driving range? Like you weren't caring. Like nothing mattered when you were out there. Now that it matters for a stroke on your scorecard, like you have to play more and you actually have to get into a round where a shot means something. Mm-hmm. And then like Dr. Izzy said, like, remember that 5-iron that you flushed from 190, like you are capable of doing it. Remember it and do it when it matters and start to do it more and more when it matters and start to hone it in.
Mm-hmm. I think some other things too, that have been for me this year that I've really focused on is really trying to treat golf more like a sport, you know? And, I know it's like often joked about, but at the end of the day, like if you're swinging a golf club 120 miles an hour and you know, you are doing something that's athletic. And so like treat yourself that way as best you can, like get some sleep, hydrate. Like, you're not going to shoot a great score if you're dehydrated, like, you're, you know, and like,
or hungry
or drunk. Like, you know, I mean, like, I know it goes without saying, some guys that maybe are, can play really good when they're tuned up or whatever, but like
Aaron Roth.
Yeah.
But unbelievable.
But if you want to, like, if you want to, again, this is my opinion. Like, I do think like hydration is huge in the summer months, especially when it's hot. Like, every 5% you're dehydrated, it decreases like athletic performance by 30% or something.
Not only, not only athletic performance, but like mental ability.
Yeah.
Yeah. Control the stuff that you can control, I think, is probably the biggest takeaway of all this, like consistency, control the stuff that you can control, you know, get out there, have a plan. And then one thing that like Luke Elfner has said to me, Ben Siegel has said to me, all these guys that I trust that like know the golf swing and know how to play, they all say like practice. And then like when you go out, just play, like have a plan and then just play. Don't be having 50 swing thoughts in your head. Yeah. I mean, how many times do you get out there and you're like, oh, I forgot this and forgot this and forgot this. Now you're not even thinking about, to your point, the sport or the game. You're thinking about your swing, which is a completely separate thing. Get out, play free, and just play with what you got that day and then fix it afterwards practice afterwards.
Totally. And I play my best golf. And it's funny because we were talking about this before the podcast, but I play my best golf when I have a feel. And I don't know, that's kind of a individual thing for people. But I do think like if you can kind of know and figure out before you play, hey, what's my feel today? You know, sometimes that can be on the range or whatever when you're hitting balls. Sometimes it can be something that maybe worked for you before. But if you listen to like the pros, like they all play with, usually they have some type of feel that they're working on. And it's just something that you can kind of key into mentally, something that helps keep your mind like in the right place. Like, you know, I was telling you, Jordan, like when I was hitting it really good, when we played on Sunday, I had a very specific feel that was like working awesome. Right. And like, and getting lined up, right. Helped and a lot too.
Shout out Andy, literally the best I've ever seen him hit it. I told you that after the round, I was like, that's the best I've seen you hit it.
Yeah.
You were on it. You were on another level.
When you can find a feel that's like working, like I'm a big believer in that. Like, cause I think I have 100 swing thoughts comes from not having a swing thought. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
and so like, and I'm not the kind of person that can play with no swing thoughts, cause my mind just gets like too distracted. And so having just something, and we were like before the podcast, like we have the McKenzie Cup this weekend. Like I'm looking, kind of trying to find out like, what's my feel going to be this week. And I know kind of what I'm working on. I know what I'm trying to do. Like I know where I'm trying to get the golf club at the top of my swing. And you know, so I'm trying to kind of find like, all right, like what's the feel going to be that produces the result? And, you know, I'm trying a few things out, like whatever, tinkering. It's not tinkering with my swing. It's tinkering with my feels. And there's a big difference. Like, you don't want to play around with your golf swing, but you do want to like play around with like what feels are producing what, you know, like there's times in your golf swing where you need to feel like you hit really down on it. There's times where you need to feel like, you know, your tempo is slow. There's times where you need to feel like your tempo is fast. There's times you need to feel like you fire the hit. Like, and it just depends. It's this ebb and flow journey of like where you are. And
100%.
I play my absolute best golf when I'm locked in to the right feel. And that's why I see Luke, honestly, because Luke helps me find a feel. You know, I'll see him for 45 minutes and like we try some things out. I'm like, hey, well, I'm going to feel this. Is it working? No. Okay. Hey, what about this feel? Oh, that looks good. You know? And so I think like, again, as amateurs, like if you can know what you're working on and then try to like develop an encyclopedia of feels that produce things, and then you're trying those feels out, like that's been a huge thing for me, like with getting better and playing my best. So
yeah. Love that. And I want to mention one thing before we close out on the topic, just because I'm in a different tier as these guys. And I think I might be able to shed some light on something that did a ton for my game, is, you know, it goes without being said somewhat, cause you see a lot of pros doing it for, you know, practice rounds, things like that, but not only hitting shots from different areas, but hitting different shots in general. So for instance, you know, when I was starting to get into golf, anytime I'm within 100 yards, I'm hitting my 54 degree, I'm chipping it and I'm hoping for the best. But over the past year or two, learning to hit it lower, hit it higher, just navigate different situations differently has done worlds for me. You know, now when I'm around the greens, sometimes you might be in the fairway and you're 80 yards out, kind of just get a feel for, okay, this is, you know, how far back I need to go in my swing to get the number I want. This is how I need to pinch the ball at contact. This is how I'm going to flight it. All these different kind of considerations. But then, okay, next you're 4 yards off the green in the rough and there's something just, whether it's a pin that's on a tabletop or in a funky location, kind of get a feel for, okay, how can I hit this a little higher and have it land a little softer or, you know, have a little bit more spin. And that's done wonders for me, just wedges in particular. But I just think it's easy for a lot of us amateurs to get, you know, totally enthralled with the idea of having this picture perfect swing where, you know, for instance, I spent a lot of time in a simulator with people and everyone's just working on hitting, you know, a flush full 7-iron and they'll do that for hours. And it's like, okay, that's great. But especially for these amateurs that are trying to get better and trying to lower their scores, are you going to be in the fairway every time hitting a 7-iron from a perfect lie? Maybe, maybe not. But I just think it's really important to practice different shot making so that when you do end up in tricky situations, you know, you're under a tree or you're totally blocked. Are you going to be able to punch a 4-iron 60 yards and have it come out soft? Are you going to be able to get the ball in the air quick and let it land soft? So that's just something that I would point out for amateurs is not only trying to hit different shots where you're not just hitting it off a perfect lie every time, but then also, okay, how can you make the ball do something a little bit different for a different scenario? So that's helped me a ton. I've shaved off a bunch of strokes, whether it's short game or just getting out of trouble from, you know, a tee shot that went a little right or went a little left. And now you got to hit something punching or shape something. So I'd encourage people to not only practice, you know, different scenarios like that, but different lies and all that. Cause at the end of the day, you're just going to have more tools in your bag if you're able to navigate it a little differently. So we love planning for success and planning for fairways, but that's not the reality of it most rounds. So, yeah, just try to take your clubs out, work some different shots, hit it high, hit it low, do what you can. And next time you find yourself in one of those situations, you might just be a little bit more comfortable stepping over the ball. So,
yeah, this, I mean, shout out to, our listeners for, I mean, this is a really fun topic. Actually, I feel like I could talk about it for a while.
And to be clear, we're amateurs, and definitely, like I will say for me, like I don't typically shoot my best scores when I'm trying to shoot my best scores. So,
yeah. And the last thing I'll say too is save some money and walk more.
Yeah.
Dude, I play huge. So much better when I walk. Like you get in a cart and you've got all this stuff around you. You got your phone, you got your music, you got all this stuff. Like walk more. I shoot my best scores when I walk, like 1000%.
The trick is like doing all the things like that you need to do, but also not caring.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, you can't not do any of these things and not care. Because you won't be good. And you can't do all the things and care so much because then you're trying so hard, you know, which I've been guilty of this summer, like just trying way too hard. So you have to do all the things, put the work in, but then just like not give a shit about the outcome.
Go play.
And that makes golf very hard.
It's true.
Like, because the harder you work, the better you're going to play. If you care less and less and less and less,
right.
Like, you
right.
know, like,
and to be expectations are a big thing, yeah. Right? Cause the better, that's what I joke about with everyone is like the better you get at golf, the harder you become on yourself. Like you'd think that, okay, it obviously does get more and more enjoyable, but you know, you scrutinize yourself differently, the better you get because your expectations go up. So I think you're totally right, Andy. Just have fun with it. Don't be too hard on yourself. I mean, I played with a guy not long ago who wasn't hitting it great. And the entire day he's all down on himself, yeah, all frustrated. And it's like, dude, one, we don't do this for a living, but two, it's not going to help you at all to just dwell on these downfalls.
I played with a guy that broke his freaking 6-iron the other day.
Yeah.
No. And his name is Jordan.
It was me. I was really mad. I was playing really well and I broke.
We're not broke, man. We just pass on what little we know. I think this will maybe be beneficial for like the 20 handicappers out there.
It'll be beneficial for everyone, man. It's a fun episode. So hope everybody enjoys. Hope everybody finds some tidbits that makes them a better golfer. And we'll see you on the next one.
Peace.